I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the Middle East. While the US and its allies continue to arm Zelensky in Ukraine and Netanyahu in Israel, President Vladimir Putin today observes Russia's Day of Remembrance and Sorrow, the anniversary of the Soviet Union's victory in World War II when 27 million Russians were killed by Nazis, the most out of any allied country. This just weeks after Russia was banned from neo-Nazi-linked France's D-Day commemoration. Earlier this week, there was panic in NATO legacy media over Putin's visit to North Korea, despite his attempts to reach out a hand of peace. The Russian president's call for a ceasefire in Ukraine was rejected by a NATO that continues to facilitate Israeli PM Netanyahu's genocide in Gaza. One of the world's greatest journalists has been fearlessly reporting on Gaza and Ukraine and revealing truths that NATO's so-called mainstream media is trying to silence. He's editor-in-chief of The Grey Zone, co-director of Killing Gaza, and best-selling author of The 51-Day War, Ruin and Resistance in Gaza. Max Blumenthal joins me again from Washington, D.C. Thank you so much, Max, for coming back on. I mentioned all of that, the Day of Remembrance and Sorrow, not because this program also goes out on RT, but because I think most people around the world are grateful the Soviet Union played a part in defeating the Nazis. You, meanwhile, for all your work over so many years, have been attacked for years. I understand social media has banned you, funding has been tried to... taken away from you, and now an oligarch-run newspaper called The Washington Post that has published so many lies over decades has attacked you. Just quickly summarise what they've done to try and destroy you, your organisation, and try to catalyse perhaps the FBI or the police to arrest your staff.
Well, this is the second intelligence-inspired attack on the Grey Zone this year by The Washington Post. I think the second largest paper in the United States, owned by one of the world's three richest men, Jeff Bezos, who signed a deal with the CIA to host its cloud for $600 million at Amazon just days after he purchased the Washington Post. In both cases, these attacks relied heavily on fronts for U.S. and Israeli intelligence. This article, this most recent article by the Washington Post's so-called digital threats editor, Joseph Menn, cited current and former U.S. intelligence officials as one of its sources against us. And it represents an escalation against independent journalism and specifically independent media that is busting the lies and propaganda that Israel has distilled since October 7th to justify genocide, which was really the topic of our last conversation, which went viral in so many different formats and which has been confirmed and corroborated not only by Israeli media, but by the latest independent UN report. And so what we're talking about with this article as an escalation is a reporter from a paper that boldly declares that democracy dies in darkness, trying to sic the FBI and other three-letter agencies on our editor, Wyatt Reed, simply because 4 years ago, Wyatt listed himself as a producer for Press TV, which is the Iranian state broadcaster.
I should say I worked for it. I should say I worked for it after the BBC for a short time. They never told me what to do compared to the BBC when I worked there on the Today program. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, according to the Washington Post and the various spooks it mobilized, you violated U.S. sanctions simply because you did work for Press TV. They relied on hacked documents to expose alleged payments made to Wyatt, and they framed it as Iranian government payments to a leader of the Grey Zone. No, and initially to leaders of the Grey Zone, as though I was on the take from Iran. They retracted that.
It's not on the take, in fairness. It's just payment for journalistic. So it's like CNN paying for someone.
Exactly. I mean, so he did honest journalistic work when he was starting his career, according to even the Washington Post, had nothing to do with the Grey Zone at the time. And yet the Post, the way they frame it is that the Iranian government is actually paying the Grey Zone. And so since this article's come out, I've had to, for example, address this with like college buddies who say, so the Washington Post says that Iran controls the Grey Zone. What's up with that? Israeli media, I-24, an Israeli government-linked media outlet reported that Iran and Russia are funding the gray zone in a bold print headline, a complete lie that's not even backed up by this Washington Post article. So the point of the article is to create a kind of steel dossier situation where they slap together enough innuendo, outright lies and smears to convince people in the three-letter agencies that maybe they need to get a FISA warrant on us, maybe we need to be investigated, maybe FBI agents need to show up at my door, but certainly I need to be harassed because, as this article explicitly acknowledges, I personally and the gray zone have published reports about Israel targeting its own citizens on October 7th, something that was deeply damaging to Israeli propaganda about that day, because as we all know, they're trying to consecrate and consolidate October 7th as a kind of new Holocaust and strip it of any context or any history. And according to the Washington Post, what I've done is spread misinformation, when in fact, this United Nations investigative report last week corroborated the fact that Israeli generals like General Barak Hiram ordered an Israeli tank to fire into a home of Israeli civilians because they were being held captive. This is what's called the Hannibal Directive, something I've been writing about since 2014 when I first witnessed it in the aftermath of the Black Friday attack in Rafah, where the Israeli military deliberately killed one of its soldiers, Hadar Golden, because he was held captive. So what we're seeing here is the Washington Post acting as one of the greatest propagators of misinformation, falsely accusing an independent website that takes no money from Russia or Iran, has no relationship to these foreign governments, of essentially being a foreign intelligence weapon, and trying to get its editor jailed, if not all of us investigated. Fake journalists trying to get actual independent journalists imprisoned, and all because we upset Israel.
I mean, given
the reason why they're doing it.
Well, you printed a lot of stuff about the New York Times. I think you forced the Sulzberger family's New York Times to have to withdraw fake rape allegation, sex crime, Orientalist propaganda brought on after October the 7th. But just on the Washington Post then, I mean, RT is connected to the Russian television state company. Press TV, similarly with the Iranian television company. What you just said about Amazon, and what you said about Jeff Bezos, do you think the Washington Post should say democracy dies in darkness and it is literally a CIA cutout if Amazon and the money that helps fund it comes from the links to the CIA's Amazon servers? That's how it pays the wages of the Washington Post staff.
In this article, the Washington Post cites the Atlantic Council's Digital Forensic Research Lab, a central arm of the censorship industrial complex, to falsely claim that Wyatt Reed has deep ties to Iranian media. Deep ties because he allegedly did some freelance work for them 4 years ago. Who funds the Atlantic Council? Well, the Washington Post doesn't tell you that the United States government funds it, the State Department. It takes money from the arms industry, the big five manufacturers that are making a literal killing in Ukraine, as well as off the genocide in Gaza. It's funded by the United Arab Emirates, an adversary of Iran. And so
I wouldn't say they're an adversary now. They made a deal. They made a deal with Iran. It's all brokered now as regards Syria, too. And actually, come to think of it, on the side of the Washington Post, they did give Wyatt Reed a chance to, they obviously go to journalism school to do this. I understand they told him to call his lawyer.
The initial email that Wyatt Reed received from Joseph Menn, this demonstrably mendacious Washington Post reporter, asked to speak to his lawyer about Wyatt's alleged sanctions violations. When was the last time you heard about a journalist asking to speak to another journalist's lawyer? He then amended that email and removed that request, which was highly unusual for a journalist. But this is what you could call a journo cop or a journo snitch, who's relying entirely on sources that are connected to the U.S. government, including a known FBI informant, Neil Rauhauser, who supposedly obtained these hacked documents, which were themselves hacked by the MEK, a cultish anti-Iran regime change organization sponsored by Israeli and Saudi intelligence, and which told people something that Wyatt had already been public about, which is that he had been a producer for Press TV. He put that in his Twitter bio.
MEK no longer sponsored by Saudi, of course, after the deal that was brokered in China, but hugely funded by
Western governments,
when I was living in Tehran, they were bombing, they were terrorists backed by European countries. I mean, I want to go on to the latest doubling down of the gray zone about their accusations against Israel and all the proxy media about October 7th. But I mean, we know what they did to Julian Assange and what they're doing to him. This is now par for the course. They're going to go for you because you are exposing them, not actually about the lies being told to keep American people poor, the working classes of America, but for Israel, more than anything.
Yeah, for a foreign apartheid state. I mean, the first attack on us, which was written by a reporter named Liza Dwoskin, who, while she was a college reporter at Columbia, referred to Palestinians as desert Bedouins with no national identity to justify Zionist colonization of Palestine. Something I asked her about when I called her and spoke to her live on one of our Gray Zone live streams. Her main source of research on us at the Gray Zone, accusing us of spreading misinformation about October 7th, was something called the National Contagion Research Institute. Okay, this is housed at the Miller Center at Rutgers University. The Miller Center is heavily funded by the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. It is a recruitment farm for the CIA. If you look at the NCRI, National Contagion Research Institute staff, it's all former spooks. And there is someone who has advised them named Sima Vaknin Gil, who was the key Israeli intelligence agent working to neutralize the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement inside the United States. Someone whose job was to meddle in U.S. politics, attack college students as terrorists, and prevent Americans from exercising their constitutional right to boycott apartheid Israel. She was advising this group that was the main source of research for the Washington Post against us, which obviously inspired the attack on us. The director of NCRI, Joel Finkelstein, was a former research director for the Anti-Defamation League. So putting the pieces together here, you see the Washington Post is nothing more than a laundromat for the three-letter agencies and Israel's Mossad.
Max Molitor, I'll stop you there. More from the founder and editor-in-chief of The Gray Zone after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the founder and editor-in-chief of The Gray Zone, Max Blumenthal, co-director of Killing Gaza. Max, you were talking in part one about the links between intelligence agencies and the attack on The Gray Zone, the attempts arguably to arrest you, your staff, and shut you down. What have you made about the grudging acceptance of revelations that you were first to make when you came to this studio, actually, about the lies being told about sexual violence used systemically on October the 7th as part of what you were saying was an Orientalist racist attempt to demonize Arabs as part of the Hasbara campaign to justify genocide?
Well, I don't know if we talked about the Hamas mass rape hoax when I was in studio with you. That hadn't really been deployed yet by Israel. It was,
I think we just mentioned it a bit, because I'm not sure whether it was before then, but the Israeli justice minister walked out of a Going Underground interview on camera when I talked to him about some of the revelations you made about organizations like Zaka involved with creating this propaganda that Hamas use rape as a systemic weapon on October the 7th.
Right. Well, what had fallen apart, or what was falling apart by the time we met, were the Israeli claims of beheaded babies on October 7th, the baby baked in an oven, the fetus cut from a pregnant woman, these sorts of grisly snuff film-like allegations had fallen apart. And so Israel decided to move on. Israel's international propaganda machine moved on to a new and even more extreme allegation. And I was able to, through our reporting at the Gray Zone, explain why. One of the top pollsters in America who has done lots of work for Israel and the Israel lobby, Frank Luntz, conducted a series of polls and focus groups and found that the most powerful allegation against Hamas that caused people in both Republican and in the Republican and Democratic Party to support Israel's assault on Gaza was the accusation of rape. So Israel made the accusation, then decided to work backwards to find the facts to support it. And this was something at the Gray Zone that we began to instantaneously dismantle. I think we were one of the first outlets with any platform in the West, in the English language, to start ripping this to shreds. We did so once the New York Times released what was to be the crown jewel in this propaganda construct, the Screams Without Words article by Jeffrey Gettleman and Anat Schwartz and noted food blogger Adam Sella. This the debunking of that article, which we conducted over several weeks and which has also been dismantled by Electronic Intifada, Mondo Weiss, the anonymous Twitter account Z Squirrel, has led to the firing of Anat Schwartz, who is Jeffrey Gettleman's Israeli fixer. The Times of London, not exactly an independent
Rupert
anti-war
Murdoch
site.
On your side, finally.
A Rupert Murdoch site, a favorite of the MI6, has published a full page takedown of the Israeli lie of mass rape on October 7th that relied, obviously, on a lot of my research and the research of other independent journalists without citing us, but it was fine. The United Nations report by Pramila Patton, which she stated was not an actual independent investigation, was unable to find any survivor of sexual assault on October 7th and was blocked from visiting anyone at rape crisis centers. Physicians for Human Rights Israel has retracted its report alleging mass sexual violence on October 7th, and a new United Nations Human Rights Council report after the United Nations report on sexual violence on October 7th found no evidence. The United Nations Human Rights Council report has accused Israel of systematic gender-based violence and sexual torture in its prisons, where the New York Times, in a paragraph buried deep in a report about Israel's Shdeh Tamim concentration camp in the Negev desert, found that Palestinians who have been kidnapped in Gaza, Palestinian men, and taken to this camp are being sodomized with batons systematically by female guards. There is even testimony by Palestinian former prisoners of dogs being used by Israeli torturers to sexually assault Palestinian men. And of course, the orthopedic surgeon at Al-Shifa Hospital, Munir Barsh, a very prominent doctor in Gaza, was tortured to death at that facility, as we now know. So it's very clear. We have clear documentation of sexual violence being used against Palestinians. The Israeli allegations have been debunked. And yet, what is the White House doing? What is the U.S. administration doing? They're continuing to push this lie. Vice President Kamala Harris this week is hosting a major event at the White House to screen Sheryl Sandberg's propaganda
film.
Tell
us about that film.
Screams Before Silence.
Maybe it'll win an Oscar like the Mariupol one did. Is it financed by links to Facebook, Meta?
Well, first of all, Meta is, you know, heavily invested in Israel. Israeli censors work closely with Meta to censor pro-Palestine opinions. Mark Zuckerberg and Meta issued a statement supporting Israel on October 7th, along with, you know, private spies like Palantir, which were working for contracts for targeting in Gaza. They're heavily involved. Sheryl Sandberg was the longtime COO, Chief Officer of Operations at Facebook. And she herself personally is a liberal Zionist who played a key part in rolling out these bogus rape allegations with Hillary Clinton at the Israeli mission, not the U.S. mission, but the Israeli mission at the United Nations. And she, you know, is the pioneer of lean-in feminism, that you can work 16 hours a day and still, you know, be a mom, you know. So she's clearly a prominent and vaunted figure for Israel to exploit here. She conducted a series of interviews with women in Israel, making allegations without any forensic evidence, any evidence at all, and relied heavily in this film on something which is a violation of the Geneva Conventions, which is confessions by Palestinian detainees, which were clearly extracted through torture. And there's one hideous confession which has been pushed out by the Murdoch press in the US, the New York Post especially, in which a father and a son confess to raping a couple to death in kibbutz near Oz. Now, why would a father and son confess to such a thing unless they had been ruthlessly terrorized and tortured? And at the gray zone right now, at this date, it may have come out by the time of airing, we're working on an investigation with Israeli researchers that demonstrates that it's simply impossible that any couple could have been raped and killed at this kibbutz, because we have the list of people who were killed there. And no such couple matches what was described in this confession. So this is clearly a false confession, and these false confessions obtained through torture populate Sheryl Sandberg's propaganda hoax documentary, Screams Before Silence, which is public on YouTube. It's free on YouTube. But if we even mention these kind of allegations on YouTube, our video gets suppressed and demonetized by the censors. So what's going on here?
Going Underground can obviously not independently verify that, but then what about the fact that when allegations of rape continue to be made, they talk about videos that were seen by some journalists? We've had people on this show that say, I think Alan Dershowitz on this show said, I've seen the video. Are they all lying, all these people who talk about this secret video that the Israelis were showing to journalists? There's no video.
I just find it so ironic that Alan Dershowitz, someone who was like a VIP guest on Epstein's Island, who had as his defense that he kept his underwear on while receiving a massage from one of Epstein's Lolitas.
In fairness, any top flight elite lawyer or person in your country, you can probably draw some Epstein connection. He does want to defend Julian Assange. But this video, there's so many people who said they've seen the video.
I just find it ironic that Dershowitz is at the center of accusing Hamas of sexual violence, given his own checkered history and the allegations made against him by Virginia Giuffre. And it always just seems like there's so much.
Yeah, well, he denies all of that. But regardless of the fact the UN this week came out with the Human Rights Council report came out with the, in fairness, a kind of exoneration of the gray zones work, a bit too late, some might say. What about the video that was screened? Was it in the White House premises? Was it in government offices?
Yeah, I see you're trying to move away from that, from Dershowitz.
Dershowitz said he saw the video of a beheaded baby.
Well, first of all, there are two separate things happening here. There's this 43-minute video snuff film that has been shown since late October to selected audiences, including intellectual powerhouses like Dr. Phil and Chris Cuomo, who all come out and say that they were shocked at the Holocaust level of violence on October 7th. And to be sure, atrocities were committed against civilians on October 7th. But that 43-minute video has never been made available to the public. I've seen many of the photos and videos that Israel shows, and some of it actually contains footage of dead bodies and photos of dead bodies of Palestinians who are killed by Israeli Apache attack helicopters. Then there's this other video of Hamas fighters supposedly raping Israeli women on October 7th. Now, let's think about this for a second. Israel is in an existential war, not just militarily, but politically, and its propaganda war is paramount. Why would it hold on to the most devastating video that would demonstrate to the world that it needs to do anything possible to prevent this from ever happening again? Why would it hold on to that and only allow select people to see it? Why wouldn't it send it right to CNN and the New York Times and the entire US media, which is slowly turning critical of Israel's military operation? The answer is it doesn't exist. We saw Annalena Baerbock, the German foreign minister, claim to have seen such a video. She cannot produce any evidence that this video is real. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, most recently on CNN, the top Democratic member of Congress, claimed to have seen this video, but can't describe what's in it. And Kamala Harris is supposedly overseeing this event where it might be seen at the White House. Show us the video. Why can't we see the video?
Just finally.
Because it doesn't exist. There's no such video. There never has been. And it's all been debunked already.
And just finally, on Qatar's role in this genocide, Al Jazeera doing valuable reporting from the Gaza Strip, amazing reporting, some of the best I've seen in my lifetime, but simultaneously reporting lies against Syria, against Russia, against Venezuela. What's happening when people are watching Al Jazeera?
Well, Al Jazeera has also been supportive of regime change in the opposition in Venezuela. And I think its model exposes not just some of the hypocrisy of Qatar vis-a-vis the Palestinians, but of Western liberalism, because it tends to cater to Western liberals. And what you have with so many Western liberals, as well as with Qatar, which hosts a US airbase, is sympathy for the Palestinians on a human rights basis, that they're this dispossessed, abused people who are getting slaughtered at an industrial rate, not support for the wider axis of resistance, and then general support for the whole Western system of imperialism that sees tens of billions of dollars forked over to Ukraine or forked over covertly or semi-covertly to jihadist death squads in Syria, one of possibly the last independent Arab state in order to or one of the last independent Arab states, in order to preserve the same system that protects Israel. And it's this hypocrisy that needs to be shattered for Palestine liberation to ever be achieved. People need to see Palestine as part of a wider picture and use it as a prism for understanding US empire. I think in my own work on Palestine, that's how I was able to begin to unpack the contradictions, the wider contradictions of US empire.
Max Blumenthal, thank you.
Thanks a lot, Afshin.
That's it for the show. Our continued condolences to those bereaved by UK-US EU armed genocide. On Monday, I'll be joined by a former NATO analyst posted to Ukraine. Colonel Jack Bowe has just published revelations about the October 7th attack on Israel. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV, on rumble.com to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Monday.